This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 27th of September 2019. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 26th of September 2019, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: the next step for station approach. Charity walk under the stars raises £15,000. And homeless target for 2023. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
The next step for station approach. Civic chiefs are preparing to hear from potential developers for the £150 million regeneration plans in Winchester. This comes after the City Council's outline application for station approach was approved. The Cabinet is now looking to set out strict criteria that bidders should follow after a meeting at the Guildhall last Wednesday, September 18th. Councillor Anne Weir, Cabinet Member for Local Economy, told the meeting, "Station Approach is an exemplar high-quality development, providing significant employment opportunity in the local and regional markets. Finding the right developer is critical, and I hope we can now move this important step forward." Cabinet members decided the current criteria should be bumped up to ensure the developers are right for the project. The new list will be confirmed at the next meeting in October. Bids from developers will then be assessed and a recommendation will be made to a future cabinet, currently scheduled for March 2020. But Tory Councillor Caroline Horrell believes a recommendation should be made sooner. She questioned, "March 2020 still seems like a long way away for a decision. Could there be a further press to complete the activities, and is there an option to shorten the timetable?" City and County Councillor Jackie Porter also linked the development to the upcoming Brexit deadline. "Should the economy collapse," she said, "and we don't want to make that negative impression, but we have to be mindful of that possibility, we need to know the limits of our own risk. And it's important to be conscious of what could be if there is a complete change in the financial environment." A number of public concerns have been raised at previous meetings over station approach, which could create 1,000 jobs with a low-carbon office building. Former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davis had said the council gave the site scheme special treatment and had acted in a serious breach of its integrity. Councillor Kelsey Learney said she understood the concern. She said, "I can understand the concern from the public about the process. This is completely understandable, and it's important that we are as transparent as possible about how we're going to select a developer." Concluding the meeting, Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "We want developers to recognise and take our criteria comments on board. Station Approach is the Council's project to reinvigorate the city's economy and to make the best use of key sites for sustainable development. It will include the installation of mixed-use developments and improvements to public spaces."
Charity walk under the stars raises £15,000. Almost 200 people took part in Winchester's first star-lit trail organised by Wessex Cancer Trust. Organisers say they are well on their way to raising £15,000 to help families living with cancer. Winchester MP and former Health Minister Steve Brine welcomed walkers to the Guildhall and spoke about the importance of supporting those living with cancer before Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eleanor Bell, greeted them at the start line and sent them on their way via a star-lit curtain held aloft by stilt walkers. As night descended and the stars shone over the city, walkers took a 5-kilometre route through the historic streets, enjoying entertainment along the way, including a wishing tree, stilt walkers, trapeze act, dance troupe, ukulele band, hula hoopers, a harpist and choir. Mary Mould, who walked with her two daughters, Rebecca and Charlotte, and close friend Penelope Webster, said it was a poignant evening. She said, "Last year we lost a very special person to us all, and we wanted to do something to help raise money and awareness for this charity. Cancer affects so many of us, and it's so easy to relate to why it's important to support anyone who has to live with it. It was a wonderful event, a proper starlit evening with some lovely surprises along the way. We all thoroughly enjoyed it." Trethowan's Solicitors in Southgate Street was the lead sponsor for the event. Wessex Cancer Trust's next event is a Christmas celebration at Turner Sims Concert Hall on Wednesday, December the 4th at 7:30 p.m. Wessex Cancer Trust provides free and local support to anyone living with cancer at its 5 support centres in Hampshire, Dorset and the Isle of Wight. And this article is accompanied by a terrific photograph. In the article it mentioned the route and the beginning of it. And there are 2 enormously tall, although one soon realises actually they're on stilts, young women dressed in black clothing, let's put it that way, with very long looking legs, but they're on stilts, and they're holding aloft a curtain which has lights along the top of it, the pelmet as it were, and then peeking through the downhanging things are Councillor Eleanor Bell, the Mayor, and a very cheeky-looking MP Steve Brine, seeing off the walkers.
I'm not sure I can follow that. Right, my item is called Homeless Target for 2023. Winchester City Council are looking to put an end to rough sleeping in the Winchester district by 2023, despite county council funding being reduced by £1.8 million. Civic chiefs unveiled their new homeless and rough sleeping strategy at Cabinet last Wednesday, which details how they will ensure no one needs to sleep rough across the next 4 years. It focuses on providing early intervention and support, promoting system change through partnership arrangements, and supplying more accommodation. But the report, which was unanimously approved, states that those with less critical support needs will need to seek help from alternative sources, following a reduction in county council funding. Councillor Kelsey Lerney believes the new strategy will refresh the current and keep up the gold standard. She told the committee, "This is an ambitious action plan to continuously improve the homeless situation across the district. The council has a very good reputation around homelessness prevention and has some key partners in the city, including fantastic charities and the very good services available. I was sat on the bus yesterday and someone behind me bumped into an old friend. I overheard them talking about how they'd been thrown out of a flat, lost their job. But they said their life had been turned around when they moved into a council flat. A housing first approach is best helping the people secure their lifestyle and making sure they can maintain their working lives as well. Former city councillor Ian Tate believes that a lot of beggars in Winchester are not homeless and that a different scheme is needed to help them. Mr Tate said when Councillor Hiscock was mayor, he featured a homeless person and said the council were helping him. Not long ago, I saw him begging on the streets. I think he means the homeless person and not Councillor Hiscock. Sorry. Mr Tate added, I don't think any of these beggars are genuinely homeless. Most of the people who are conceal themselves from the public eye. The council need to address the lack of funding for chaotic lives for those with drug addictions and alcoholism. These people you see stealing and fighting, I think the authority need to look at that. These people are not homeless and need to be supported in another way. He added, of course, there is an issue with homelessness in the district and I hope the new strategy succeeds. On Tuesday night, two people had sleeping bags in shop doorways on the high street. Next month is set to see a renovated city centre premises come into operation as accommodation to help people off the streets after it sat vacant for 18 months. Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council has teamed up with Hampshire-based homelessness support organisation Two Saints to reopen 84 to 86 Sussex Street. James McDermott, Regional Director of Two Saints, said, Two Saints are pleased to be working alongside other homeless services in Winchester and in partnership with Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council to deliver their preventing homelessness strategy. Our service in Sussex Street will include 12 self-contained flats based on Housing First principles, which means people in Winchester who are sleeping rough will be offered a home with intensive support to help them maintain their tenancies and return to independent living. The building is being refurbished and will be operational in October 2019.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Blanchard, Peter John Blanchard, at home on the 30th of August. Edwards, John William Edwards, on the 12th of September, aged 59. Findon, Florence Mary Findon, known as Molly, on the 13th of September, aged 100. Hebbard, Jean Hebbard, on Friday on the 13th of September. Key, Brian Douglas Key, on the 17th of September in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, aged 85. Mantle, Edith Maud Mantle, on the 4th of September, aged 92. Shepherd, Nigel Shepherd, at Derby Hospital, on the 16th of September, aged 51. Now we have Christian comment.
Right, the power of stories. This church year, which runs from September, like the academic year, the Methodist Church has as its theme testimony. This has been chosen by this year's president and vice president. The aim is for us to share how we came to be Christians in the hope that this will encourage others. In a way, it's a throwback to the early days of Methodism when, at the start of every service, people from the congregation would be invited to give their testimony. We, Christians and non-Christians alike, are used to the idea of testimony being given in court, either spoken or written, as being a witness to the truth, and this has been transferred to matters of faith and belief. The root of the word is Latin, testis, meaning witness. So, we Methodists are encouraged to tell our story. Story can be a very powerful tool in influencing others. I'm not going to tell my faith story as such, or not today. Instead, I'm going to tell you about a journey I made last week and the stories they tell about other people's faith journeys. Last Thursday, I travelled to Winchester to attend the Thanksgiving service for a man called Ted Ashley. He'd been a local preacher in the Methodist Church for over 50 years and had served the church and his local community in many other roles. Despite a very serious illness some years ago, and now getting on, he was still volunteering when no one else came forward. I first met him when I came to Winchester as a local preacher on trial in 1985, and when other people found fault, doubtless for my own good, Ted always managed to make the point in a very positive and encouraging way. I wished I'd told him of the encouragement he gave me. I shall try to make a point in future of giving more feedback before it's too late, a different form of testimony. On the way home, I swerved to avoid a cyclist who wobbled in front of me and managed to clip the raised edge of a bollard with my front tyre, quite why it was necessary on a country road. As I entered the village of Hursley, various alarms came on and I heard a funny noise. I pulled over and parked on the cross hatchings outside the King's Head, an obvious place for a Methodist minister to park. I was about to phone Green Flag for assistance when a young man asked if I had a spare and offered to change it for me. He would accept no money, not even for a drink. A true Samaritan in coming to my rescue. I did thank him profusely. And who knows, maybe he will get to hear this testimony. And this is from Rosemary A. Baker.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start off with the first letter,
which is from James Anderson, and it's entitled Wasteful. Sir, in his letter from Westminster in the Chronicle, August the 22nd, Steve Brine asked for feedback on NHS experiences. I have supported my very elderly neighbours, a close friend, my wife and myself in NHS experiences. Here is a selection from the last 12 months. Hospital clinical care has been excellent when one has got that far. Administration has been hopelessly wasteful, a financial black hole. A 91-year-old arrives in hospital with difficulty to be told that his GP has completed his MRSA test report incorrectly and to come back another day. A referral for YAG laser, a 5-minute laser eye treatment, directed to a head and neck clinic. A doctor saying at 10 a.m. that my wife can be discharged once she has her medication, but it takes 2.5 hours before he can find a computer on which to issue the prescription, and a further 5 hours for the pharmacy to deliver it. A known requirement for an X-ray not declared until the patient is in front of the consultant, resulting in a long delay. A friend totally disabled by severe arthritis in both knees, being refused referral by her GP, claiming the NHS would not treat her as her BMI was high, whilst a consultant described the GP decision as nonsense and booked her for surgery. A GP and CCG director lecturing me on the evils of privatisation in the NHS, oblivious to himself as a GP being part of the largest private contractor group to the NHS. Sorry, Mr. Brine, but I doubt that you understand any of the root causes here. Whilst on your watch, fellow rebel Chancellor Hammond's vicious pension penalties have thinned the ranks of NHS consultants. Nor do Winchester MP hopefuls from other parties appear to have anything in their backgrounds to suggest other than more lightweights. It is time for a fresh face to represent Conservative values in the coming election. That's from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
The next letter is called Pot and Kettle. It's written by Andrew Beadle. Sir, I entirely agree with Fiona Mather's comments, Chronicle Letters, September 19th, that the withdrawal of the whip from Steve Brine is very regrettable. Yes, he rebelled, but so did Boris, on two occasions during Theresa May's premiership. He is a conscientious and hard-working constituency MP, which is recognised by most reasonable voters of all political persuasions. Unlike Steve, I voted to leave, but I have admired his pragmatic approach to argue for a sensible deal with the EU. It seems that elements within the Winchester Conservative Association have wanted him to take a harder line, and some even wanted him deselected a few months ago. It wasted no time in informing members that they would be seeking a new candidate, contrary to the rules of the National Party, and before they even knew whether he would appeal against his expulsion. This was despite him winning the seat back in 2010 with comfortable majorities ever since. I have no idea whether Steve intends to stand as an independent. I doubt whether he even knows himself. However, if the whip is reinstated, the Conservative Association would do well to swallow its pride and give him his wholehearted backing. That's from Andrew Beadle, Marsdown Place, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Theresa Skelton, Transparency. Sir, buried inside the Chronicle, September 12th, was an item on page 62. Put your questions to the Chief Constable. I raised the issue of effective liaison with the police at the last meeting of Winchester City Council Cabinet, of which there appears to be none at the local level. My reason for suggesting that a genuinely independent person should be appointed as liaison officer by our City Council is that at county level, the system lacks real independence, transparency, or responsiveness to the public. Across the nation, police and crime commissioners, PCC, have seemed to prefer closing ranks with chief constables rather than challenging their inadequacies, pretty much allowing them to proceed as they please. Hampshire is no exception. Your report refers to compass meetings. These are usually poorly advertised, barely attended by the public, and vetted attendance only. Most people are hardly aware that they take place. There is no obligation on the part of the PCC to allow any particular question submitted in advance to be posed in open session at meetings if he or she does not think it fits, nor even if it is posed for the Chief Constable to give an honest answer to which he or she can be held in any way. Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane does not propose any meaningful change to this format. Filming such meetings will not make the proceedings any more transparent than they already are. Nobody who had not attended would be any the wiser as to whether any video record had been edited or whether they were viewing the director's cut. What is wanted is not a film show, but transparent and meaningful, fully open public meetings. This is much more likely to come about if such meetings are staged locally under truly impartial chairmanship in a particular community with its own distinctive problems. Winchester City Council could pilot such a scheme. Finally, in the interests of democracy, the chief constable and any other police officer should be excluded from the participation in any such meeting. Only the elected police and crime commissioner should be present. His or her role should be much more to listen than to talk, and then to translate the serious representations made from the floor into effective directives to the chief constable. The latter, being unelected, should be allowed no opportunity to spin any self-serving line from such a public platform, as such officials are so prone to do if allowed. Power should be made responsible. And that's from Teresa Skelton, the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party, Hyde Close, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter, which is entitled Reassuring, is from Simon Lever and is also related to policing matters. Sir, the editorial, Chronicle September the 12th, reveals the very necessary need for more police officers on the beat, a visible sign of support and comfort to all who believe in law and order. Further, the nature of crime has evolved to include internet fraud, a more desk-driven but necessary activity. There are always many police and associated experts involved in crime investigation, but seeing police officers on the street makes a clear statement and is so reassuring. Crime prevention is critically important, and proactive policing is essential to ensure that people can walk the streets in relaxed confidence. Initially, police officers could leave their homes in uniforms to carry out their duties. Reporting to the police headquarters is essential, but the use of mobile technology could be of use until a new police station is built or space allocated. When there is a market downturn, the last resort is to reduce police presence. In times of economic uncertainty, proactive policing is most needed. I regard the increase in police numbers to be a reassuringly positive policy. So writes Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Now, the next letter is headed Pointless, and it's written by David Tate. Sir, it seems that my letter, Chronicle, August 29th, has caused some comment not only about the speed limit, but the state of Springvale Road. Although there have been some positive reactions by local residents, sadly there's been none from the monitoring department. Perhaps they did not read the Chronicle. The remarks regarding the lowering of the speed limit from 40 to 30 are well justified, especially with the cost to the ratepayers of the new signage, all to no effect if the speed limit is not policed. I do, however, notice that a section of road local to Kingsworthy, where a councillor resides, is constantly monitored. The comments regarding the potholes in Springvale Road are also valid. The section between Nations Hill and King Charles was relaid a few years ago, and except for a few poorly reinstated excavations, remains a delight. However, the length from Nations Hill to Springvale, turning, is a disgrace. About 18 months ago, the road was surveyed, markings put on the pavements of distances and obstructions, which I was led to believe was prior to that section being resurfaced. It now looks like, if the job is eventually done, the council, or us ratepayers, will have to pay for a resurvey. What a waste of money! Also, a waste of ratepayers' money was the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit for the centre of town. Who, in their right mind, suggested spending thousands of pounds on the project? New 20-mile-an-hour signs, road markings, office time by expensive staff, etc., when eventually we learned that the police were unable to monitor the speed limit. So it's become another council white elephant. One would have thought that those who make decisions would have investigated whether it would have been monitored and policed before spending money on another publicity stunt. That letter was written by David Tate, Meadowland, Kingsworthy, Winchester.
And this letter is from David Cox about Junction 9. Sir, on Thursday last, driving home through Winchester at 4 p.m., I wondered why there was so much traffic coming towards me. Turning into the dual carriageway from Hairstock, I could see that the traffic was coming down from the Three Maids Hill roundabout. Yes, you guessed it. A34 traffic heading south towards Junction 9 was standing still. Those who have done this before head into Winchester. If Junction 9 is not updated and the blockages continue, that traffic may be taken through the King's Barton Estate, passing the new school being built, possibly at a time, like last Thursday, just as the children are being collected by their parents. Is this causing anyone to reconsider the closure of the dual carriageway? And where do the recent protesters to Junction 9 changes live? All 30 to 100, the estimate said. It seems that their organiser lives on Badger Farm. Easy access to a supermarket, the hospital and railway station. The bodies look like young students. Not much experience at living away from the city. Our county and city councils are doing their best to meet the climate changes, but we still have to live in this present time. Why don't the protesters target China, which is still digging coal and building coal-fired electricity plants? And that's from David Cox, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Big Boost. That's the title of the letter from N.R. Dennis.
Personal.
Sir, you have reported on several occasions that the proposed station approach development will bring an £81 million boost to the local economy. The same figure was quoted by the city council official who chaired last week's consultation meeting. I have never seen an explanation of how this figure was arrived at or what it means. Can you supply this information? If not, perhaps a council representative could respond to my letter. I did submit this by email as a question before the meeting, but it was not addressed. That's from N.R. Dennis, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
F. Botham has clear vision. Sir, I read with surprise the letter by T.T. Martin, Chronicle, August 12th, criticising Mitchell Deaver Parish Council for not being more directive and visionary. Our parish council has a clear vision of the future of the parish as a whole and has managed to encourage a good mix of housing in an area which some time ago was rather elitist. I believe Mr. Martin himself was involved in the protest against this growth in mixed housing. Our parish council has defended us from the new town proposal twice and the threatened biodigester and incinerator. Councillors pride themselves on their even-handedness between the villages, as a result of which we have fine village halls, playgrounds in good order and grants to encourage the wide variety of clubs and groups that thrive here. They have made our threatened pubs public assets. The future of our local pub is in the hands of the community, who certainly support it. Our parish council has fine leadership in an individual who has for many years held the welfare of the parishioners as the lodestar for the work of the council. Democracy works only when individuals take part. Every resident in the parish is invited to join the council, including Mr. Martin. Needless to say, it's easier to complain than to take part. That is by F. Botham, Andover Road, Mitchell Deaver Station.
And this letter from Phil Yates is headed Thriving Venue. Sir, it's all stations go at the Theatre Royal. Last Monday, a brand new cafe bar opened its doors while patrons discovered a completely refurbished foyer when they arrived the previous week for the start of the autumn season. This is the latest phase to improve facilities at this 170-year-old building, which was erected as a hotel but converted into a cine variety theatre in 1914 and threatened with demolition in 1974. On behalf of the founder members who helped save the property and who've been involved in so many changes, I wish to put on record our appreciation and to thank our hard-working Chief Executive, Derek Newland, and his team so much for working on the project. I would like to include in our thanks the trustees, the board, I think they mean the board of directors, and of course all organisations who've given financial assistance. A special vote of thanks must go to the contractors and their skilled workmen who laboured so hard, giving up their bank holiday weekend to make sure the improvements were completed on time. They can rest assured that their work has been appreciated, not only by us, but by visitors who I spoke to on our open day last weekend. Well done, everyone. And that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
In praise of the civic gardeners, writes Edward Chisnell. Actually, his name is Richard Chisnell.
Yes.
But as we know, but he lives in Edward Road, so that's why I made the mistake. I apologise for that. Sir, I feel compelled to write to congratulate all those involved in giving our ancient city such a beautiful and colourful display of flowers through the summer months. Visitors, along with residents, can feel justly proud of the visual impact of the multitude of hanging baskets all over town, as well as the traditional beds of flowers in Abbey Gardens and elsewhere. In this time of political turmoil and environmental uncertainty, it's reassuring to see some of the basics of our local quality of life being so professionally managed. Well done, the councils, both colours, the BID and the contractors, for keeping up colourful appearances, notwithstanding the dry weeks. The hanging baskets always look well nourished, and this requires daily effort. I remain a proud Wintonian. So writes Richard Chisnell, Edward Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And now another letter from someone who, it's actually from Mark Rowe, who describes himself as a proud council tenant and Wintonian.
Oh.
There we are, you see. The heading is Council Trusted. Sir, I write to you about my experience with the City Council. I grew up in council housing and have always trusted the council in their support. When people put down the council, I shall sometimes defend it. The council has helped me a lot, not just with housing, but in many supportive ways. On Tuesdays, I play walking football at 10 a.m. at the River Park Leisure Centre. £2 to £10 per person, I think. That, or perhaps it's £2.10 per person. Yeah. Oh. And would encourage anyone who has played football or not to come and play. I have played for around 4 years now, and I'm getting tired. No, I don't believe it. I have played for around 4 years now and enjoy each Tuesday as everyone there is welcoming and there's a real team spirit. The council, in my view, are very good at helping people keep fit and maintain a healthy life in the city. This year, I welcomed my partner moving in with me and the council were great with advice and support, moving plus any problems that have come up. In particular, I would like to thank the council housing team, especially Rachel Mumro, Councillor Porter and others. Even though from different political background, I feel they all come together for the good of Winchester. I hope to be a council tenant for many more years. I hope also future council meeting can deal with disability needs and tenancies. That's written by Mark Rowe, proud council tenant, Wintonian, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester.
So nice to have some positive letters in the gloom that seems to surround us these days.
Agree.
Right, we now move on to items of historical interest. We have them from 200, 150 and 25 years ago. So we're here from 200 years ago.
Yes, a very short piece. Monday, September the 27th, 1819. On Tuesday, the third Jubilee, or 150th anniversary of the Charitable Society, established in this city for apprenticing the children of indigenous natives, was held.
Indigent.
The stewards and trustees assembled in the morning at the George Inn, from whence they walked in procession to hear divine service.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, September the 27th, 1919, a special meeting of the Hampshire Automobile Club was held at Bewley Abbey on Saturday afternoon, the chief points under discussion being the future activities and policy of the club. Some 30 cars arrived during the course of the afternoon from all parts of the county, and at 3 p.m. the members assembled in the historic old domus of the abbey.
50 years ago was Saturday, September the 27th, 1969. The shortage of drivers, which is forcing King Alfred Motorbus services to cut some of their less popular services, has reached such a stage that directors of the company are having to drive the buses themselves to keep the services running. The company has given notice to the traffic commissioners that they intend to cut services for which there is little demand and which cause wasteful and uneconomic use of the company's resources. At their meeting on Wednesday, the Winchester Rural District Council decided to lodge a formal objection to the proposals, although they appreciate that serious and worsening labour shortages are putting the company in grave difficulties. The public have a fortnight to lodge objections and a public hearing will take place, but this may not be held for at least 2 months. The company say many of the services are being run at the moment under extreme difficulty.
And 25 years ago, on Friday, September the 23rd, 1994, the problem of using Winchester's Parchment Street as a city centre traffic rat run has prompted local residents to put forward proposals for one-way traffic restrictions. Around 50 residents from Parchment Street, St Peter Street, Upper Brook Street and Middlebrook Street met last week at the Samaritan's Hall, Parchment Street, to discuss their perception of the traffic problem. Hugh Jobling of Parchment Street had contacted officers of the Winchester City Residents Association, who agreed to jointly convene the meeting. Mr. Jobling noted that his road was being used as a shortcut by traffic travelling into the city centre from North Walls. He proposed that the only way to prevent such rat running was to make Parchment Street, St. Peter Street, Upper Brook Street and Middlebrook Street one way, with flow from St. George's Street to North Walls.
Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by First Person.
And the editorial comment this week is entitled "The New Strategy to Tackle Homelessness." Everyone will welcome news that the City Council has agreed a homelessness and rough sleeping strategy that aims to eliminate the problem by 2023. The ambition in the face of further cuts by the County Council is laudable. No one should be homeless in the 21st century in a rich country such as the UK. We report that among the measures that will help tackle the issue is the reopening of the hostel on Sussex Street due next month. But as social housing campaigner Ian Tate told the City Council Cabinet last Wednesday, the issue is more complicated. Many of the seemingly homeless beggars on Winchester High Street are not homeless, and most beg to feed drug addictions. It's one thing to find money to put a roof over someone's head, but it's quite another to address the reasons why that person is prone to rough sleeping. There is no doubt that many budgets have been hollowed out in the decade of austerity. The new City Council strategy is a positive step, but doubts remain whether long-term it will be successful.
First person is written by George Hayter, and perhaps I'd better explain to everybody that there's something in the news at the moment called Brexit. You may not have heard of it, but this is an article headed "Brexit Chaos Is Our Fault." Most people seem to think that politicians are to blame for Britain's inability to leave the European Union in an orderly fashion. And it's not just the public that think that. Many politicians agree that they are responsible for the long-running shambles. But I don't agree. The average politician is no more incompetent than anyone else. It's just that politicians have a tough job. If politicians aren't to blame, who is? I reckon it's us to blame, the voters. I don't blame myself, of course. No one ever blames themselves. And I don't blame you personally. No, it's the anonymous millions of UK voters as a whole that messed up. It's the way we voted. Loads of us turned up to the polls, and though it wasn't intentional, we did a terrible job. At 62% to 48%, at 52% to 48%, our vote was pretty equally split. So the referendum ended with half the country telling our politicians to get us out and half saying keep us in. We didn't need a statistician to calculate that whatever ministers and MPs did, half the country was going to be unhappy. As Brussels negotiations got into detail and we all became aware of the various possible types of Brexit, the proportion of voters likely to be content with the eventual settlement shrank further. Growing public support for a second referendum hasn't made the Brexit puzzle any simpler. With everybody now demanding something different, MPs face a thankless task. At one extreme of the argument are those who want to leave with no deal. At the other extreme are those who want to ignore the 52% vote and stay put. Since the country has been unable to agree the way forward, the answer might be to, well, toss a coin, starting with heads were in, tails were out. Or should it be heads were out, tails were in? With passions running high, it may be impossible to agree even that. You might not think so if you've seen me at a buffet, but I believe in moderation. I think a middle path must be found if we're going to minimise voter disaffection. The necessary compromise might involve a soft Brexit, perhaps, to assure Leavers of independence restored while assuring Remainers of trading advantage retained. Though moderation is probably best, I recognise that moderation is short on excitement. Moderate people don't make a lot of noise. And moderation rarely makes the news. You don't see many protesters waving placards demanding moderation. One of the hardest things about moderation is admitting you could be wrong. Reluctantly, you have to concede that the other side have some truth in some of their arguments. A moderate Remainer, for example, might have to admit that it could be, well, rather nice to leave and be an independent nation again, in the tradition of our proud history and Ireland status. Moderate Remainers might also admit that in a democracy it's better if a referendum result does stand. Meanwhile, a moderate Leaver might reflect that perhaps it's not an unattractive thing after all, living in a big unifying bloc with ideals of peace and well-being. Reasonable Remainers might concede that the EU bureaucracy could have destroyed the odd job here in Britain, and reasonable Leavers could take note that every other nation, instead of getting out like us, is trying to get into a trade deal with its neighbours. One politician who is plotting a moderate course through Brexit turmoil is Steve Bryan. In March, the Winchester MP resigned from the government to show he couldn't stomach a no-deal Brexit. This month he voted against the government Brexit tactics, and Boris Johnson rewarded him for his moderation by kicking him out of the parliamentary party. Mr. Bryan has voted for Mrs. May's Brexit deal and against leaving without a deal. All this makes Mr. Bryan a Brexit moderate and, in my view, an example to other MPs.
Now, a few items of what's on. For the final time this year, Twyford Waterworks will be opening its gates to visitors on Sunday, October the 6th. It provides the ideal opportunity to discover how drinking water has been pumped from deep beneath the Hampshire Downs for the past 120 years. The historic pumping station, a scheduled ancient monument, is the only complete Edwardian waterworks to survive with its steam, diesel and electric pumps, its water softening works and industrial railway. With most of the original machinery now restored to working order, including the 1914 steam engine, visitors can marvel at the sights, sounds and even smells of everything in action. On this day, in addition to the original waterworks pumping equipment, there will be plenty of visiting exhibits in the shape of classic cars and other vintage vehicles, steam road engines of various sizes, and stationary engines. This is all at the waterworks on Haseley Road. Visitors can explore the nature trail along with the Hyde and Pond, hearing about the wildlife that makes its home around the waterworks. Trust volunteer Matthew Feldwick said, "The waterworks is simply unique and we all look forward to showing off one of Hampshire's hidden gems. The tea room will be offering a wide range of hot and cold drinks, sandwiches, toasties, snacks, cakes and ice creams, along with the popular barbecue." So that's the Twyford Waterworks on Haseley Road, open to visitors on Sunday the 6th of October. A Winchester charity is staging two fundraising events. GO-LD, GO-LD stands for Learning Disabilities, is holding its annual bridge tea on Thursday, October the 3rd from 2 to 5pm at the Millennium Hall in Littleton. To book a table for £60, contact Mary Huntley on 01962 868370. That's Marjorie Huntley on 01962 868370. There will be friendly competition and homemade teas. And on Saturday, October the 19th, the charity will benefit from a concert by the choristers of Winchester College at St Mary's Church in Twyford at 7pm. There will be a mixed programme of religious and popular music. Tickets are £16, including a glass of wine and light refreshments. And for that, you should contact Mrs R. Francis on 01962 711220. That's Mrs. R. Francis on 01962 711220. And Space in the City, the series of theological talks, returns this autumn to Winchester. Speakers include Terry Waite, the envoy who was held captive in solitary confinement in the Lebanon between 1987 and 1991, and the former TV journalist Debbie Thrower. The series is entitled Alone, and the talks will be held at the United Church in Jury Street, and they are six experiences of solitude. The programme is October the 2nd, the Samaritans will talk about all the lonely people. On October the 9th, Debbie Thrower will talk about growing older. Will silence befriend or foe? On the 16th of October, Terry Waite will talk about solitude. On October the 23rd, Vivian Wheeler will talk about you don't have to be alone. On October the 30th, the Reverend David Hinks will talk about in chains for the gospel. And on the 6th of November, the Reverend Julia Morant will talk about Leave Me Alone, Longing for Space When There Isn't Any. The talks are on Wednesday lunchtime from 12:30pm to 1pm. There is no charge, but donations are only welcome. So that's between Wednesday the 2nd of October and Wednesday the 6th of November at the United Church. Lighting up times. Sunrise these days is around 7 o'clock in the morning and sunset is around 6:45 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have any problems with the recordings you have received from us, please phone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Right, this is a care home resident has really good time.
Oh,
dear. A 96-year-old resident of a Winchester care home had her wish come true when she was whisked off for a spin with a biker. Joyce Ward's love of motorbikes was discovered following a trip to Hampshire's Milestones Museum, where they have a display of bikes. It was many years since she'd experienced the thrill of taking to the open road, and she told the staff at St. Catherine's View it was her special wish to be able to ride on a motorbike again. Laura Sheldrake from the Companionships team set about making her dream come true by contacting the Southampton and District Motorcycle Club. While riding pillion wasn't really an option, travelling on a trike was the answer, so Joyce could ride in a bit more comfort. Laura said Mark Hibbard, who's known as Bear, very kindly offered to take Joyce on a ride round Winchester. He was so good and made sure Joyce was comfortable throughout the experience. Joyce was smiling throughout the whole ride from St. Catherine's View through to Hursley, on to Otterbourne and through Winchester Town. She loved having everyone watch her and waved at those walking and staring at the bike procession that was approaching. The Southampton and District Motorcycle Club members and associates gave up their time to make sure Joyce had the time of her life, and it was greatly appreciated by her family. Granddaughter Hilary Bloomfield said, "I couldn't believe it when I got the call to explain what my grandmother was going to be doing. I'm so glad my grandmother came to St. Catherine's View, as they always go above and beyond, and this is just another example of what they can make possible for the residents."
Dame launches the panto. It's behind you. Winchester shoppers were left feeling slightly more festive after Theatre Royal launched this year's pantomime, Dick Whittington. Dame Dolly Dumpling performed the comic baking scene at the Brooks Shopping Centre before walking up the high street to pose for photos. Dame Dolly is played by familiar face Julian Eardley, who has been the theatre's panto dame for 10 years. He will once more be joined by Ed Thorpe as the lead role. The pair first starred together in the theatre's 2017 show Peter Pan. Dick Whittington will be at Theatre Royal Winchester from Saturday, November the 30th to Sunday, January the 5th, 2020. It tells the story of a man who seeks his fortune in a London tormented by the revolting rodents. Tickets can be booked by calling the box office on 01962 840 440. I'll read that again. 01962 840 440.
Ideas sought for new regeneration. The journey started 25 years ago, but efforts to transform a chunk of Winchester city centre are starting again. Around 70 people gathered at the first Central Winchester Regeneration Open Forum to tell civic chiefs what they want to see in the new scheme, once called Silver Hill. Councillor Kelsey Learney, chairman of the forum, said it aimed to make people feel that they've got a real stake in the area. "We will come back to the forum to report and find out what you think before decisions are taken. We are still very much in the early stages." Katie Kopeck of Consultants JLL said research was being done on what was feasible in a world where the internet has undermined high street shops, The previous scheme proposed scores of new shops. The forum on Tuesday heard that the council was developing ideas for Coitbury House on Friarsgate. Recent protests over the climate crisis were leading to perhaps a greener vision for the building. Chris Holloway, environmental campaigner, called on any development to be net zero carbon and added, why not let it crumble? Councillor Kim Gottlieb said the development should be civic-minded and suggested holding fire over Coitbury House as we may want to knock it down and build a new museum. On archaeology, he disagreed with the current policy of minimum disruption, minimum intrusion and maximum preservation. He called for a big project, such as with the Brook Centre in the late 1980s, which saw a major archaeological excavation that became a tourist attraction. Judith Martin, senior member of the City of Winchester Trust, called for the scheme to have live work homes for art students to keep creative people in the city post-graduation. I wish Winchester felt like a university town. And it doesn't. If we kept the students there, there would be a terrific buzz and creativity. Derek Newland, boss of the Theatre Royal, agreed, saying that there are amazing festivals in Winchester. The Hat Fair, jazz, comedy, gin, heritage, open days. And that people wanted such experiences that were visceral and real. Former councillor Ian Tate said, I was interested to hear that we were at the start of a journey. I thought it started 25 years ago, but we seem to be further away. Councillor Learney answered, I understand the public's frustration, but we need to get the scheme right. Scrapping the first scheme was the right thing to do. We would have regretted that project because the world now is different to the world then. Carol Deans, mother of three schoolchildren, said the council needed to focus not just on students, but on all young people. The meeting was held at the Nutshell, the art centre that was once the antiques market, which was saved from demolition under the Silver Hill scheme. Among the ideas left by the public on post-it notes at the forum were place to sit and linger, Coitbury House, consider using for affordable housing, and we don't need a bus station in the city centre.
Steve Bryan hears plans for a new pavilion for Hursley Cricket Club. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has had more free time following the proroguing of Parliament. He has visited Hursley Park Cricket Club to hear more about its proposals for a new pavilion. Mr. Bryan was invited by Chairman David Worthy, who explained that the main pavilion was originally an army hut put up in 1965, and while still functional, it limps along with the help of numerous volunteers who patch it up and keep it going. Mr. Worthy explained that the club has started the process to build a new pavilion, meeting potential architects, builders and the Hampshire Cricket Board, and was keen to brief the club's MP and gain his support. Mr. Bryan said, Hursley Park is clearly a fantastic, vibrant club, and what a stunning setting they have. I love the ambition the committee are showing for a new clubhouse and very much valued the chance to chat with some of the team about their ideas and how I might be able to help. Mr. Worthy said, we are delighted to receive Steve's report for what will be a long journey in realising a new pavilion. With four men's league teams, two ladies' sides competing at national level, nine coach teams, including three girls' sides, and numerous other activities around the club, such as All-Stars for the youngsters looking to access cricket, we are desperately in need of a new facility which will help cement the club's future. The funding background for these types of community projects is complicated. And if there are businesses out there who, as part of their activities, are willing and able to fund community projects such as this, we would be very pleased to hear from them.
Murderer and Kate to talk. A murderer will be in conversation with TV journalist Kate Adey in Winchester to raise money for charity. And it's the Footprints Charity, a mentoring agency for ex-offenders in Hampshire and Dorset. Erwin James is now an author and journalist for The Guardian after serving a 20-year life sentence for murder. The talk will be in New Hall at Winchester College on Friday, October the 11th at 6:45 p.m. Tickets are £20 to include drinks and canapes. Ms Adey, who worked for BBC South in the 1970s, is now a patron of the charity Footprints. The Vice Dean of Winchester, Canon Rowley Ream, is also a trustee of the charity. Mr James is the author of three books: A Life Inside, A Prisoner's Notebook, The Home Stretch, From Prison to Parole, and Redeemable, A Memoir of Darkness and Hope. The charity held a similar event last year with Guardian journalist Luke Harding in conversation with Ms Adey.
Green light for work on archaeology. Winchester City Council has approved an archaeological investigation for the Central Winchester Regeneration Area. Following a public consultation, archaeologists have been given the green light to begin an early investigation of the Silver Hill area. Archaeology has been a major discussion point throughout the extensive public consultation. As part of a public information event in 2018, an archaeological panel met with local residents to address questions and discuss ideas. The work will look closely at the soil conditions of the site, which dates back to the Roman period. It will provide vital ongoing data and information about the site to inform the overall strategic approach for the area. Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, said, "At the archaeology event last year, our residents and the archaeological experts agreed that this was the best approach to take. I'm delighted to see that we're pressing ahead to discover more about this historic part of Winchester. We know that many people are passionate about archaeology, and it is vital that we fully understand what lies beneath the ground and take a sensitive approach as we look ahead at transforming the area."
New Guitar Festival heading to Winchester. Winchester's reputation as a go-to city for top-ranking music will be enhanced still further next month with the arrival of a new Winchester Guitar Festival. The brainchild of locally based classical guitarist Mark Eden, the festival will be putting world-class performers into one of the city's most atmospheric venues to create a uniquely distinctive musical presence, with a programme ranging from Renaissance England to the bordellos of Argentina. The classical guitar is an understated instrument whose power lies in creating powerful atmospheres, says Mark. This fits perfectly with Winchester, which has a number of brilliant venues, which are quiet and maybe sometimes not well known, but will make for beautiful experience. For this opening year, the venue of choice is St Lawrence's in the Square, which will host, over the first weekend in October, October 4 to the 6th, some of the biggest names in classical guitar music from the UK and abroad. But, significantly, not only guitarists. Maybe the most high-profile name taking part is that of James Gilchrist, one of the finest tenors on the English musical scene, with a string of successful CDs to his name. James will be singing Songs with Guitar by Schubert, Britten, Downland and Dodson, accompanied by Mark Eden, October the 4th at 7 p.m. And he did not need a lot of persuasion. James is a friend of mine, but I was delighted when he immediately agreed to take part in our inaugural festival, said Mark. Having him perform in the perfect space of St Lawrence's will be special. At the other end of the programme, Mark will also be accompanying American flautist Jessica Marie Quinones, who will perform The History of Tango, October the 6th at 3 p.m, to transform a Sunday afternoon in Hampshire into a brilliant immersion in the passion of Buenos Aires.
Inspector's high praise for Winchester Home. A care home has received a top rating from regulators after an inspection. Tegg Field House in Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester, received an outstanding overall rating from the Care Quality Commission. The facility, which is run by Hartford Care, was deemed to be excelling in its care and responsiveness for residents. Following a visit to the care home in June this year, the inspector's report said staff did not see their, quote, exceptional practice as anything more than what should be provided, unquote. The report said, throughout our inspection, we saw people being offered choices, for example, where people had meals, where they wanted to sit, what they wanted to eat, and what activities they wanted to participate in. People received exceptionally person-centred care and support. Staff knew people very well. They knew who the person had been before they came to the home and about their interests and families. The kind of information that made people individuals. Staff could start and hold a conversation with people because they knew them so well. Sean Gavin, Hartford Care's chief executive, said, "This is a magnificent achievement for Tegg Field House and one of which we are all immensely proud. Huge congratulations to Jo Aitken, the home's manager, and her superb team who have worked tirelessly to attain such incredibly high standards at Tegg Field. We are delighted that their hard work has been recognised with this fully deserved outstanding rating." Tegg Field House can accommodate up to 24 residents in a two-storey building, and at the time of inspection there were 23 people using the service. The care home was acquired by Hartford Care in 2004 and had previously been rated as good after the previous CQC inspection in 2016. Jo Aitken said, "I'm completely overwhelmed by this overall rating for our wonderful Tegg Field family. In our last inspection, we received a good rating, which was the incentive we needed to go one better this time, and we did it. Our priorities have always been to ensure our residents receive the best possible care at all times and without exception. We treat them all as unique individuals and do everything we can to make their lives as comfortable and enjoyable as possible. I cannot praise Team Tegg Field enough for their exceptional work in making our lovely home a wonderful place for both our residents and our staff. This accolade means so much to all of us there."
Climate strike protesters demand action. Hundreds of college students, school pupils and adults took to the streets of Winchester to demand action on climate change. The campaigners, armed with signs and megaphones, were backing the global climate strike just 3 days before the United Nations summit in New York. One of the organisers, 17-year-old Peter Simmons college student Emily Wanstall, said, "We have been striking for months, but it just doesn't seem to like much is happening in response. Everything seems to be getting worse, and this is at the expense of young people's futures. I know lots of people who are applying for university, but there's almost no point. Our future is looking poor. Where will we be in 10 years' time?" The group marched down the high street to the Guildhall and returned to the Buttercross, where a busker shared his microphone for people to give speeches. A number of young people took to the floor, pointing out that climate change is affecting the rest of their lives. And this article is accompanied by a couple of photographs, one large one showing lots of very eager-looking students all carrying placards, and the other one outside the cathedral. My favourite placard here says, There is no planet B.
Marathon date. More than 1,000 runners are expected at the Clarendon Marathon on October the 6th from Salisbury to Winchester. The off-road route will span along the ancient Clarendon Way with a few extra turns to make up a full 26.2 miles. Above 90% of the route is along country tracks and paths with a finishing line at King's School. The popular event, now in its 21st year, is organised by the Rotary Clubs of Winchester and Salisbury. The Clarendon Marathon is rough, but runners love it, said Winchester Rotarian J.J. Heath Caldwell, chairman of the organising committee. About half of the runners are local, with the rest coming from across the country, and we get a few from abroad. They are known as marathon tourists, people who travel all over the world looking for events to compete in. Organisers have announced that this year, for the first time, runners will receive free race photos from the day. In addition to the full marathon, there is also a half marathon, starting in Broughton, and a new 5-mile mini run. There will be 250 volunteers to marshal the route.
And if I may just say that some of those volunteers are put forward by Winchester Talking newspaper, and six or seven of us every year, we've done it for about 7 years now, we man I think it's called
a feeding station,
that'll do, yes, at near Farley Mount. Rain or shine, we stand there all day long giving out drinks to people and bread pudding and
flapjacks.
And flapjacks and bananas, yes. and the like. Marvellous day, we love it.
Yeah.
Cathedral opens its doors to public. Winchester Cathedral opened its doors to the public for a special event as part of the National Heritage Open Days Festival. Last Thursday evening, the public were given free tours, talks and workshops, helping them learn more about the iconic building in the city centre. The event began with Evensong by the Cathedral Choir, followed by activities and displays throughout the nave, which had the usual seating removed. Attendees could meet the stonemasonry team and those who look after the vestments, the music department, the head gardener, and other groups within the organisation who make this church tick. There were a number of craft workshops for children to get involved with, and the Friends of the Cathedral put up various displays. The boy choristers also put on a short recital towards the end of the evening. And accompanying this article is a photograph of two volunteer women polishing the brass war memorials. Certainly looks terribly shiny, both of them. And I must say, I'm pleased to see they are wearing plastic protective gloves.
Is it the women that are very shiny, or is it the war memorial?
Both.
Okay. I have another article about Winchester Cathedral. Winchester Cathedral celebrates the crucial role of bees. Winchester Cathedral hopes to create a buzz with its new artwork. Did you see what they did there? The cathedral has erected a giant bee on the west front. It celebrates the contribution of bees, highlighting their vital role in sustaining the natural world, and is part of the first Green Hampshire Harvest Weekend from October the 5th to the 6th. The artwork continues a theme after Winchester Diocese's annual church school days in June were inspired by bees. Hundreds of children took part in workshops with gardeners from Kew Gardens and a beekeeper before planting bee-friendly plants in the cathedral grounds. The very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "The bee is a great symbol of the beauty and intricate connection of creation. Humanity relies on bees and other small insects for pollination. This giant bee is one way to remind ourselves of the great significance of small things and the need to look after God's creation. The giant bee also symbolises the importance of recycling, incorporating materials that have been thrown away or donated.
Heritage days attract big crowds. Thousands of people looked behind the often closed doors in Winchester during this year's Heritage Open Days. Residents and visitors from across the country attended the festival, which featured 145 events across 10 days. Experts gave talks and tours around some of the city's most iconic places, including the Cathedral, the Great Hall, and Winchester College. The sponsors, who confirmed they will back the event next year. Co-organiser Becky Brown said, "It's been an incredible festival this year, with thousands from far and wide visiting the city and surrounding area. We've not had a chance to start looking at the evaluation feedback cards, but I've spotted some great comments, such as, superb experience. Highlight is seeing things that are not normally open to the public. Really enjoyed it. And appreciate the time, effort and enthusiasm from all that goes into making this happen." And this article is by a lovely photograph of the Great Hall with crowds of people watching a lineup of performance under the great table hanging above them.
Runners brave a rainy city half. Downpours throughout the morning did not deter thousands from taking part in the 4th Winchester Half Marathon last Sunday. A stream of 1,634 runners ploughed their way around the 13-mile route, setting off and finishing in front of the Guildhall. The hilly course featured changes of scenery as the contenders headed into the countryside, passing through Hursley, Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm, with spectators cheering and clapping along the way. The first male finisher was Pete Concannon, 1 hour, 24 minutes and 20 seconds, whilst Francis Liddell, 1 hour, 34 minutes and 13 seconds, was the first female. Later, children and families took part in the fun run, with dozens of participants dressed in fun costumes and carrying props.
Suchet opens uni facility, says the headline. Award-winning actor David Suchet has opened Winchester University's forensic laboratory. Mr. Suchet, famous for portraying Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot, formally opened the new state-of-the-art laboratory at an official ceremony. He had received an honorary doctorate of arts from the university in 2017 for services to acting. David portrayed Detective Poirot in the long-running ITV adaptation of Agatha Christie's most famous novel series. This role earned him a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Royal Television Society. The new laboratory has a range of industry-standard equipment, including a petrographic microscope, an electrophoresis DNA kit, a fume cupboard, and advanced glass wash facilities to help preserve a controlled environment. These will benefit students on courses such as anthropology, archaeology, cybercrime and forensic investigation, forensic studies, geography and human bioarchaeology. Professor Joy Carter, Vice Chancellor, said, "I was delighted to welcome David Suchet to open our outstanding new facilities. We want to provide our students with first-class learning experiences. These state-of-the-art specialist facilities enrich our teaching and allow students to gain vital practical skills."
Worthies Festival deemed best yet. The 5th Worthies Festival has been deemed the best to date by organisers. Designed to bring the community together, the biennial event returned from September the 14th to September the 22nd, with a firework display bringing proceedings to a close. The festival provides a variety of free activities and live music for all ages. Jane Rutter, chair of the organising team, said, "The 2019 festival has been the most successful yet. It's been pleasing to see people like the new activities, such as the Open Day and the Duck Race at St Swithin's Church. We had fantastic support from the community and everyone who came had a great time. We could not put the festival on every year, but with it being every 2 years, it gives people something to really look forward to and is part of what makes the event unique. As a team, we have to put a lot of work in, and I have to thank all the sponsors. A wash-up meeting has been organised for October the 2nd at 8 p.m. in Worthy's Sports and Social Club. Residents are invited to share their views and say what they would like to see when the event returns in 2021.
Former GB swimmer dives into new waters. A former Team GB swimmer is diving into new waters after launching an education business in Winchester. Julia Beckett, who was in the swimming team for more than 6 years and won a Commonwealth Games silver medal, set up Bloom Ed to provide further support for school pupils. The 33-year-old, daughter of former City Council leader George Beckett, developed the company with Joanna Clemo, with whom she worked at St Bede's Primary School. BloomEd offers both after-school tutoring and sessions to home-educated children, as well as support to parents who want to help their children's learning. Julia, who grew up in Compton, told the Chronicle, "After retiring from swimming, I never thought I'd be setting up my own education business. It started as a seed of an idea about 5 or 6 months ago, but both of us weren't too sure whether to go for it. We sat down, looked at all the ideas we had, and cut them down to what the business is now. And after telling people what we had come up with, and speaking to people who had taken similar ventures, it all became really exciting. When we found our premises at Unit 12 of Winnell Industrial Estate, it felt more real, and ever since, we've been welcomed by the whole community there." She added, "Children in schools are facing a far more pressured environment these days. So when Joe and I had this mutual idea, we knew it was the right thing to do. There was certainly a gap for us to fill. I really enjoyed teaching at St Bede's, but the reason for moving was to fill that gap. Of course, we've had patches of being worried and times when we question whether we've done the right thing, but we've always taught children to take risks and be brave, so it felt only right to practice what we preach." The business partners are both highly experienced in the education industry. Joanna has been teaching for the last 12 years in a number of schools and spent the last 2 years at St Bede's. Julia first became a teaching assistant after retiring from swimming following the 2008 Beijing Olympics, and then attended university to fully qualify as a teacher.
Bus changes are affecting the elderly. Stagecoach has introduced changes to buses from Fareham to Winchester City Centre, but not everyone is happy. The number 69 route starts at Roundabout Station and passes through Wickham and Twyford on its journey to the bus station in the Broadway. Since September the 1st, a revised route has been in place in the Bishop's Waltham area due to issues with parking in Free Street. But local resident Dick Jones believes this is troubling elderly commuters. He said, "The bus stops on Free Street and Corhampton Road serve not only regular bus users, but also a large number of residents of care homes for the elderly. Rerouting of this service means that elderly residents of Ridgemead House, Cedar Court and Bishop's Waltham House now have a lengthy walk to the town centre to access the 69 bus." The Chronicle has contacted Stagecoach and Bishop Waltham Parish Council, but has yet to receive a response.
President-to-be visits floral designers. Members of Winchester Floral Design Society were delighted to welcome Michael Bowyer to their club this month. He's recently been confirmed as the next president of NAFAS, the National Association of Flower Arrangement Societies. He proceeded to create his designs for his demonstration entitled The Riches of Autumn. Three of the following creations were superbly colourful bouquets. There is currently a need to move away from the use of oasis foam for floral design, as it does not biodegrade. So his bouquets stood in water-filled vases. Fairly ordinary. Finally, another stunning arrangement was set in an elegant branch of driftwood. The competition for the Somerville Cup was won by Therese Fisher. To put water in.
Of course. Rebel MP returns. The MP who joined the rebellion over a no-deal Brexit was back in the House of Commons on Wednesday to help deliver a Brexit deal. Steve Brine used Twitter to broadcast his response to Tuesday's bombshell Supreme Court ruling that Prime Minister Boris Johnson had unlawfully prorogued Parliament and broken the law by asking the Queen to approve his request. Mr. Brine used the social media network to broadcast the following message. Supreme Court ruling today reminds everyone that we live in a parliamentary democracy. I lost the whip for upholding that principle and stand ready to be in the House of Commons tomorrow, if possible, to deliver Brexit with a deal and the support of the UK Parliament. He then tweeted an image of a packed suitcase.
Wet weather. Last week was the second wettest of the year locally, according to the Environment Agency. The agency's measuring station at Otterbourne recorded 56.68 millimetres in the 7 days to Monday. Only the week to Monday, June the 10th, had more rainfall, with 57.57 millimetres. So far this year, rainfall is far below the average. There has only been 416.40 millimetres, compared with the 12-month average of 804.88 millimetres. So there you are.
Mm. Well, on that, well...
that wet note.
On that wet note, I think that brings us in. OK, I think the weather for the next few days is certainly we're going to get quite a lot of rain over that, but as has been pointed out, there is a bit of a water deficit this year, so perhaps we need to make it up for it. I'm afraid we've had to pay for that fantastic week we had last week with that beautiful Indian summer. Anyway, that concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to all the other various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye. Now, on a previous occasion, we had some discussion about the correct pronunciation of a word relating to an area where you go swimming. It was about whether it was a Lido or a Lido. Mm. Anyway, extensive research done by your team here shows that the correct pronunciation is Lido, a small short L. So from now on, we'll talk about the Winchester Lido, not the Winchester Lido. Anyway, so on that... useful for a pub quiz, maybe.
Yes.
Anyway, so that concludes it for the day for today. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.